We're going to be talking about the emotions of the Seder. And I'm going to start by focusing on one particular emotion, and that is gratitude. I have a feeling that by the end, this will be the only emotion that we will be covering, because as we go through the Seder and as we discuss it, while there are places for other emotions, it seems, and this is the argument that I'm going to be making tonight, is that gratitude is the central and most important factor emotion when it comes to how we are supposed to be experiencing the Seder. And hopefully along the way, as we discuss the ideas behind it, we can also come away with some practical applications of how we can work on our own sense of gratitude and enhance our Seder experience. So we're going to start off by talking about the benefits of gratitude. So from a psychological perspective, there are dozens of research that has demonstrated the, you have here 25 different correlates, positive associations that gratitude has with our emotional well-being, our social life, our career, our health, our personality. It makes us, you know, if you just start a list a few of them, it makes us feel better, more relaxed, more resilient, less envious, makes us more social, kinder, better, deeper relationships, better marriages, helps us in our workplace, better career, better achievement, improved decision-making, helps with our sleep, makes us less sick, increased energy, actually makes us live longer on some level, or at least is associated with that. And we're generally, people who have gratitude are less materialistic, more optimistic, more spiritual, and can connect to others and to God and to themselves in a more robust fashion. But there is a challenge to gratitude, right? It sounds so easy, but it's really not. And gratitude is hard for various different reasons. One, I'll share with you, this is a quote from the dissertation that I made when I graduated from St. John's. I did a gratitude intervention for parents. And part of my hypothesis and intervention was going to try to impact was that we often think about the gratitude that a child should have for a parent, and sometimes that's hard to do as well. We don't always think about the flip side of that. So Cicero wrote that gratitude is the parent of all virtues. And I wanted to look to see whether or not there's a virtue for parents to have gratitude towards their children. And it's not so simple. Even though we're appreciative of children and it's so wonderful and it's a blessing on some level, maybe not everybody, but on some level, the challenges of parenting and the stressors of children perhaps not listening to their parents might create some level of we do so much for, or a parent does so much for a child, they should have gratitude towards the parent. I don't need to have gratitude towards them. And the sometimes stress, resentment for not listening, et cetera, might create what are negative attitudes, negative emotions. So what I wanted to do was to adapt what was a gratitude intervention. We'll speak about this a little bit later on. There's one intervention used to increase gratitude is called the it's a gratitude list, basically three or five things a night you write down that you're grateful for. And studies show that by doing this over the course of 2 weeks, it boosts your gratitude, boosts your well-being. And if you it can maintain for a while those positive boosts. And if you create a habit of it, it's something that's beneficial for life in general. So what I wanted to do was to specify that that gratitude should be for specifically things about your child that you're grateful for, either things that are things your child did for you, or just more generally, broadly, things you're grateful for your child for. And by targeting and specifying that gratitude intervention that a parent should have for a child, that perhaps that could increase the relationship, decrease some of the sort of the taking for granted, and maybe some of that stress and resentment that comes along with a tough day of parenting children who may not be listening. I don't know if anybody can relate to such things. So the one quote that stuck out was, and sort of encapsulates why gratitude is so hard. So this parent was supposed to be writing things that they're grateful for. And he or she wrote, "I am grateful for the things that make you want to bang your head against the wall." So when we're so overwhelmed with negative emotions, it's, and sometimes that's stress, sometimes that's life, sometimes that's just the burden of being overworked and being stretched thin, and whatever challenges we have in our particular lives. Some of them are more universal and communal challenges, but some are personal to us specifically. It makes it very hard to feel gratitude, right? This person was supposed to reflect actively. They had the time in the day where they were supposed to reflect on their gratitude, and they just couldn't do it, right? Or they did it at least in a sarcastic, sort of a resentful way. So gratitude is difficult. Gratitude is hard. It's hard to intervene and to change our gratitude level when things are stressful. But I want to argue is that the Seder night, despite the fact that we might be stressed out, right? It almost, the framework for Seder night is so strange in the sense that we're trying to create this moment, this experience, this feeling, this emotion. And it just comes after such a long and hard, arduous trek of stress and, I don't want to paint the picture too negatively, but there could be fighting in the house. There could be anxiety about getting things done. Do we have enough food? There could be money stressors. There could be family stressors. So many who's coming to the Seder, and especially add in COVID concerns, etc. There's just so much possible negativity that comes along. And then we are encouraged and invited to almost forget all about that, to erase that from our memory, to hit a hard reset and try to cultivate an emotional experience. And my point is that that's very difficult to do. So what we're going to try to establish are some, again, to frame why gratitude is essential to the Seder, and then try to strategize how we can perhaps cultivate that gratitude despite the fact that it is so difficult. So to start off with, and I'll pose it to you, feel free to type in the chat if you'd like. Where do we find gratitude at the Seder? Or more broadly, where do we find gratitude in the story of the Exodus more generally? So does anything pop out to you? Any big moments, any big ideas? Maybe more nuanced ideas. Maybe you've thought about this more deeply, where gratitude plays a central role at the Seder night. I'll give you a moment. I don't know how many people are on their phones or on their computers. It's hard to tell from the Zoom screen, but I'll give it a moment to see if somebody wants to chime in the chat to see, or in theory, I guess you could unmute yourself if you want to give a quick answer to the question where gratitude comes when it comes to the Seder or the Exodus more broadly. Any thoughts? Although I have a feeling that I'm going to be not hearing anybody here. Anybody want to suggest anything? Gratitude at the Seder. Ah, thank you, Leonard. Hallel. Okay, I think that's a great answer. Hallel is a manifestation of our gratitude, and you could make the argument that it's the whole Seder is a buildup and culminates the whole Maggid at that Hallel, where we finally sing out in our gratitude. Okay, great. Anybody else want to suggest anything? It's a few texts that are explicitly formulated in terms of their gratitude style. Okay, Marshall, Birkas HaMazon, that's a wonderful answer. Thanking Hashem for the food that we had is for sure an element of gratitude, something that's more general, even though we do it at the Seder, maybe it takes on a different aspect at the Seder, maybe a heightened aspect, but definitely true that the Birkas HaMazon is an epitome of gratitude. Great. Dayenu, excellent, Leonard, Dina. Dayenu is a classic text that is a what we might call a gratitude list of biblical proportions, if you will, right? It's everything that happens that we're grateful for, and we say that if it be enough, if it would just this, it would be enough. If just every we're sort of not taking anything for granted. We're explicitly stating every element of the process was important, and we appreciate it, and we're not taking it for granted. And just to pause and to stop there, without anything too fancy or developing anything too much, it's really important that we A, think about Dayenu as we go along, but how much can we apply that to our own lives, right? So on two levels. A, on the spiritual level, on the Bein Adam L'Makom, between us and God level, can we create our own Dayenu for our own lives, where we say, if this would have happened, it would have been enough. But I don't just stop there. You gave me something in addition to that. And if it wasn't just that, but it's even more than that. So there's the communal historical Dayenu that we say at the Seder. And if we want to cultivate this added gratitude, which again, part of this is developing why that's important, and we'll get there. But if we want to cultivate this added gratitude, just realizing that we might want to personalize this. We might want to say, how can I make a Dayenu list in my own life for my relationship with God? How does my own personal narrative fit within that same structure and paradigm? And I would say that not only with, and this is a two sides that we're going to be looking at throughout the presentation, that it's not just the Bein Adam L'Makom, but it's also the Bein Adam L'Chaveru. And that's an important element of gratitude. Gratitude is towards another. And that other can be a human other. It could be a divine other. It could be God. So anything we talk about, we talk about gratitude, it's true that at the Seder, we're generally focused on a Bein Adam L'Makom. It's between us and God. But I would encourage all of us as well, as part of getting to that Bein Adam L'Makom is our relationship. The way to develop and cultivate, or one of the ways to develop and cultivate a relationship with God, is to develop and model those, that relationship we have with others as well. The better relationships, the better we can relate to our peers, to our family, to our friends, the better we will be able to then also have that relationship with a being that is hard to relate to in its essence because of the transcendence. So we can do a Dayenu list to our parents to their children. If it's not parents and children, then it's to friends, then it's to colleagues, to coworkers, to mentors, to people who might not be around anymore. Maybe it's somebody from our childhood. Maybe if it's a parent who's no longer with us. But if we can make a Dayenu list for that outlines all the details, all the phases and benefits that this person has done for us, it can really enhance our gratitude experience. And that's a pretty robust and comprehensive form of a gratitude list. So far we have had a few different suggestions. Halal, Dayenu, Berchas Hamazon. I'm going to assume that that's it for now. If you have anything later on you want to type in, please feel free. So if you see on my list, we got two out of the four. We have Dayenu and Halal. There is another phrase that we say as part of that ending off of Magid. We say, Lefichach, right? Therefore, we are obligated to thank, to praise, to laud, to glorify, to exalt, to honor, to do all of these, to bless, to extol, and adore, all these synonyms to God. Because of everything that he did for us, we are obligated to have this, you know, broadly speaking, general gratitude. So those are three elements that are explicit within the text that focus on gratitude. But if you go to the first bullet point here, I think thematically there's a bigger story at play. If you go to the beginning of Sefer Shmos, what we have is that we're told that Paro, or the Pharaoh, did not recognize Yosef. And there's two opinions. Does that mean that it's a new Pharaoh who didn't know him because he's brand new, fresh, doesn't have that historical memory? Or is it the same Pharaoh who is just ungrateful towards Yosef and everything that Yosef did for Egypt? So if you take that approach, which the sages do on some level. Again, it's a debate, but that if you take that second side, what comes out is that what Paro really is he epitomizes ingratitude. Here's somebody who saved everybody, saved the whole nation, and then we're just going to turn around and forget everything that he did. We're going to pretend it doesn't exist. We're going to be ungrateful for what Yosef did for Egypt. So Paro stands as a paradigm of ingratitude, and the Medrash actually takes it a step further and says that the one who doesn't acknowledge the other, the benefits that the other person did for him, doesn't acknowledge what Yosef did to him, will eventually come to not acknowledge what God has done for him. And therefore, later on, Paro says, I don't know who God is. I don't know about this God that you speak of. So it's actually getting back to that point from before. It's how we relate to others. And if I'm ungrateful towards others, then I'm also going to eventually, that can carry over to not being aware and turning my awareness away from all the benefits that God has bestowed upon me as well. So it's a dynamic relationship between our gratitude towards others and our gratitude towards God. Either way, for now, Paro stands as this paradigm of somebody who has who embodies ingratitude. Moshe, on the other hand, if you follow throughout the story, actually is the paradigm of gratitude. And we see that most directly, and there's a few indications of this, but we see that most directly when it comes to the plagues that Moshe conducts through God's hand on the Egyptian people. So Moshe is supposed to do Dam Tzvardei Akinim, the first three plagues. He can't perform himself with his stick, with his staff. He actually needs Aaron to get to do it because the water for the plague of blood protected Moshe when he was in the river. So therefore he is unable, he just figures on his own actually that I can't do this. Even though God told me to do it, I can't do this. It's impossible for me to do it. It has to be that Aaron does it. Somebody else has to do it because I can't show ingratitude towards the water. Same thing, can't show ingratitude towards the sand that protected me by covering up the body of the Egyptian. So there is a Moshe himself goes to be a paradigm of what it means to be grateful, not just to humans. We take it one step further, right? How we act to humans can relate to how we act to God. How we act towards inanimate objects can affect how we relate to others, which can affect how we relate to God. So Moshe is this extreme, power is the extreme on the ingratitude. Moshe is an extreme of gratitude. He's our paradigm. So at the core of this Yetzias Mitzrayim, at the core of the story of Exodus, you can make the argument, lies the good versus evil, which is a manifestation of gratitude versus ingratitude. But it goes even a step further. So we know that the Chazal, whoever the Baal Haggadah, the person who the series of people who designed the Haggadah text that we have, had a decision to make when they were designing this text. And if I was on that committee, which I don't think I would have made it, but if I was, I would have presumably picked the various primary texts, if you would call them that, from Sefer Shmos, from the actual, there's a gray window blocking the screen. Okay, thank you. Is that better? No? Yes. Okay. Better. All right. I'm not sure what that is, but let me know if there's any technical issues again, and I'll feel free to change. Hope everybody can see it now. Okay. So the primary text of in Exodus, where they're actually leaving Egypt, right? That's some good raw material that we can use to remember what happened as we left Egypt. Right, that should be the text that we use, but it's not, and we end up using the text from Devarim, from later on, where it describes the mitzvah of Bikurim, bringing the first fruits. And when we brought the first fruits, we used to say a specified text that would recap a sort of brief history of the Jewish people up until that point where they would be bringing the first fruits. And it would say, Arami Ovid Avi, my father, my ancestors were wandering Arameans, or a wandering Aramean tried to destroy my father, however you want to explain that. This is a debate. But the point is that the text then recaps what happens briefly in a few verses, recaps what happens in the story of the Exodus from Shmos. So that serves as the primary text. So why would we do that? So A, you might say that it's just shorter, simpler. It's sort of a synopsis, so it makes it easier to go through. That could be. But the other arguments made by various commentaries, a suggestion is that it might help us understand why we would use the text of the Bikurim, of that what's called the vidui, the confession of the Bikurim, is to look at what the mitzvah of Bikurim is. So Bikurim as a commandment is represents its bringing of the first fruits at its core, the Sefer HaChinuch suggests, relates to gratitude, right? So it's gratitude that we have. It's the gratitude that we have. We bring those first fruits. So we have gratitude to God. And it's so the essence of the mitzvah is gratitude. So arguably, the reason why we choose a text, even though it's not a primary through the story, even that might have been a better choice, but we choose a text that has to do with gratitude to show that the whole Haggadah itself is gratitude. The whole wording, the whole text, the everything we say at its core is imbued with gratitude. And one point that actually might bring that out even further is if you look here from the pasuk here in Devarim, it's part of this discussion of Bikurim. So when you would go to the person would have the first fruits, you can imagine the scene. He goes to Jerusalem. He is going to bring these to the Kohen. He comes to the Kohen that was whoever the Kohen was in his day, and he says, "V'amarta elav." You should say to this Kohen, "Higadti hayom l'Hashem Elokecha." So, what does this mean? "Higadti hayom." So, the word "higadti" obviously sounds like the word "haggadah," right? It's related to the word "haggadah." So, what does "haggadah" mean? So, the translation here translates it: I acknowledge this day. If you look here in the Targum Yerushalmi on the bottom, uses the word says, I acknowledge and I praise. So the Haggadah comes from the word, if we take this connection, from acknowledgement, which is related to gratitude, to acknowledge what God has done. I'm acknowledging God. I'm appreciating. I'm shavchinan. I'm praising you for all that you have done for me. So the word Haggadah itself doesn't just mean to tell. That's how we usually translate it. It's to tell, to speak. But it could also mean to express gratitude, to appreciate. And that's pretty powerful. Haggadah is to the Haggadah, not just that we use a text that represents Bikurim, which is gratitude, but the word Haggadah itself can be related to gratitude. I'm bringing this one step further. This is based on something that I heard from a Shir on Vayitor by Rabbi Yossi Levin. Beautiful shir, highly recommended. You have the link here, and I'll post these sources so you can see them when we upload this shir, and you could just click the link. But the shir is an analysis of why we have three matzos, and it's really not so simple. And I leave it to you to research that and listen to his shir if you want all the details. But one possible explanation, to just give you the synopsis, I guess I'm a spoiler alert. If you want to listen to how he develops it, it takes him a while to get there. So, you know, close your ears for now, for the next minute or so. But the crux of his argument is that the reason why we have the three matzos based on this Sefer Rokeach is because the measurements of the matzos line up with the measurements of the Korban Todah. And the Korban Todah is a sacrifice that was brought when somebody had, it's a gratitude offering, right? It's when there was something that I'm grateful for that I want to show God my appreciation, I would bring this Korban Todah. And the whole story of the Exodus actually relates to the four reasons that the Gemara, the Talmud, tells us that we would, that one would bring a korban toda, bring the sacrifice. Either they're coming out of jail, they're crossing the ocean, etc. You could read the sources here, but the point here is that the matzahs, the yachats, these three matzahs relate to the korban toda, and at its even bigger core, this korban toda has a strong relationship with the korban pesach. They are unique in what the laws that apply to them are. You have to eat them in a short period of time, and the point is that you bring a lot of people with you. The Netziv talks about this, the Abar Benel talks about this, is that you want to make a public spectacle of the gratitude that you have. So you have a lot of food to eat in a short period of time. It means you have to invite guests. This has to be something that happens that you're grateful for in public. And the same thing on Pesach is that ideally, COVID restrictions aside, ideally, the Korban Pesach and Seder night as a outgrowth of that is something that happens in a community. It's something that we share and we celebrate together in groups. So it's clear that both in terms of the basic text has elements of gratitude explicitly within it. The narrative, you can make the argument, goes back to Moshe and Paro as being the epitome of gratitude and ingratitude. The Haggadah itself comes from Bikurim, which is a paradigm of a mitzvah that is about gratitude. Haggadah itself can mean gratitude, and the whole Seder revolves and is related to the Korban Todah, which is the sacrifice of gratitude. And to take it one last step is that now you can jump off and say, this is actually, the Seder is a paradigm for everything. So one of the famous statements, the questions that the sons ask, Ki shalcha bincha machar lemor, ma edut v'achukim v'mishpatim asher tziva Hashem Elokeinu etchem. What is this? What are all these decrees, these laws, these rules that Hashem has commanded us? Why are we doing all these things? Not just Pesach. What are all these mitzvahs about? What are we doing all these mitzvahs? Why are we obligated in all of this stuff? So the Ibn Ezra on that pasuk in Devarim 6:20 writes, and this is a translation from Sefaria, says, what are the rituals? That is to say, why do we intelligent human beings accept such shackles? Why do we choose to do all these mitzvahs? You shall answer that God redeemed us from the house of slavery, and he has performed all this good for us. Consequently, we are obliged to revere his name, having already acknowledged that he has been our benefactor. Moreover, it will be to our benefit, and it will keep us alive, for his commandments are life to those who find them. So the Ibn Ezra, based off this pasuk that relates to the Haggadah, but at its core, it's about the Exodus. The reason why we're obligated in mitzvos, why we do this whole Torah thing, is out of gratitude. Right? God saved us. He took us out of Egypt. So now we are indebted, and we're grateful.
He put us back.
So we serve him. So we worship him, and we follow all the mitzvos. So it's not just about Pesach. Pesach is emblematic for everything else. And he ends off, and obviously it's good for us to do mitzvos. It's not just that we're, you want to, in terms of just the pedagogy here, if the child is asking, why are we doing these shackles? So the answer is, it's not just that we have to, we're obligated, otherwise we're going to be in trouble. That's not the answer. The answer is, A, it should come out of a feeling of gratitude, but B is to remind them also that these are things that are good for us, right? These are commandments that it's v'chai b'hem. These are things that will benefit us and have the positive, sort of the lo-lishma, if you will. It's the mitzvos we want to do mitzvos because it's the right thing to do. That's true. But we also do mitzvos knowing that mitzvos are good for us in the big picture and in the long run. Mitzvos are things that we should be doing. And I think that really is encapsulated with gratitude, because gratitude, as you go back to, think about the first slide, has all of these benefits. If we can embody gratitude, which the Haggadah is trying to tell us, it's all about gratitude. There's 25 different benefits to that for our own lives. So how do we do it? How do we, besides for the text and the ritual. Sometimes we get caught up in text, and it's hard to have emotional experiences just from text and reading text. So how can we improve this emotional experience? So I bring your attention to a great article that was written, I believe, 2 years ago by Rabbi Naftali Lavenda, who's our director of online rabbinic programming for the CJF. It's called The Power of Moments. You could access it here. The link is there. You could search it. The Power of Moments through Nirtzah and the Steps of the Seder. It happens to be, it's a coincidence, I was reading this book recently, and then I came across this his article, and it's a great article. To give you a little bit of background, so The Power of Moments is a book by Chip and Dan Heath. They're brothers who write a series of books that are psychologically oriented, almost Malcolm Gladwell style, for those who are familiar with Malcolm Gladwell, in terms of creating a narrative and story to bring out important psychological concepts. So this book about The Power of Moments gives an overview of how the importance of moments in our lives, the sort of serious, influential, inspiring, uplifting moments, and then how to cultivate such moments. So it's a very, very solid book. And what Rabbi Lavenda does is he connects this to the Seder. It's a 3-page article. Again, feel free to read the whole thing. I'm not going to go through all of it now. He gives some suggestions and explains the connections to the book. But there's one piece that I want to highlight that he does not, that I think is essential for our discussion. So the important thing to know from the book in order to understand the connection to gratitude is that the way to foster a moment, a powerful moment, is through four different ways, combination of the four different ways, or one of the four ways, depends on the particular situation we're talking about. But here it's summarized by Rabbi Lavenda, and you can find this online also on thepowerofmoments.com, is that there's four different categories: elevation, insight, pride, and connection. These are the four ingredients to developing a powerful and meaningful moment. What is elevation? So elevation are moments that are above the routine. They make us feel engaged, joyful, surprised, motivated. And there's ways to build elevation by changing from the routine. Right, we have routine, we have our normal things we go through, and by using strategies we can change the routine, elevate the experience to be something that's memorable. Number two, insight. There's some moments that are transformative because they give an insight into ourselves, into our lives, into others. It's sort of paradigm shifting as to we thought about ourselves one way or about others another way. And now all of a sudden this moment has helped shift my reality. And that's a powerful moment that we're going to remember for the remainder of our lives, because it's so powerful in its shift. Number three is pride. Ways to create a moment of pride: we commemorate others, we recognize others, we celebrate milestones, and other ways. Actually, in this section of pride, they actually quote, just as a side point, there's a beautiful example. I told you they bring examples and stories, so it's they bring an example from Ritz. They quote Yeshiva University, Rabbi Isaac Elchanan Theological Seminary, and they say that it's here on page 188. They quote Rabbi Penner, Rabbi Menachem Penner here. I don't know if you could see it in the video there. They quote Rabbi Penner, and the story that Ritz on their Friday classes, along with Dr. Palkovitz from Azrieli, created a forum for the smicha students. I was in this when I was in smicha as well, to be able to role play various difficult experiences with actors, so that when eventually the smicha students would go out into the field and meet with congregants in emotionally charged scenarios, they'd have some experience role-playing, preparing in advance for such a situation. So they quote that, they quote Rabbi Penner, they quote Yeshiva University, they quote Reitz as an example here of preloading our responses in advance, so we're ready when the right moment comes. We need to practice things before they happen. Otherwise, we'll sort of get lost in the moment. And not so important for the Pesach, but an interesting YU factoid. And then finally, the fourth way of getting a moment is through connection, meaningful connection. Groups unite towards a meaningful goal. These are ways that we can create connection. So four ways: elevation, which is changing the routine to feel inspired; insight, shift of perspective; pride, to celebrate, recognize others; and connection, to connect with others. All four of these will help provide moments of powerful moments. And Rabbi Lavenda gives, I believe, eight different examples of things we could do at the Seder to create powerful moments. Ayin Sham, see that link, read it there. I'm going to suggest a ninth that has to do with gratitude. And Chip and Dan Heath quoted as well, but it's a famous idea. And it stands in contrast to what I did for my dissertation. So in my dissertation, I had the parents write a gratitude list, which is, again, every night, write three things down, five things, whatever different versions of it, that you're grateful for. The other intervention that's used in the positive psychology literature to increase gratitude is called the gratitude visit. And the difference between the gratitude list and the gratitude visit is the gratitude visit creates an intense and powerful and emotional moment. What is the gratitude visit? So here's from Power of Moments. They quote Martin Seligman, who's the father of positive psychology. He suggests as follows, right? And you could do this if you want. You could follow along, or you could just listen. He says, close your eyes. Call up the face of someone still alive who years ago did something or said something that changed your life for the better. Someone who you never properly thank. Someone who you could meet face to face next week. Do you have a face? It's a little bit small. I'll make it bigger. Your task is to write a letter of gratitude to this individual and deliver it in person. The letter should be concrete and about 300 words. Be specific about what she, he or she did for you, how it affected your life. Let her know what you are doing now and mention how you often remember what she did. Then they quote a beautiful example from somebody named Paul Glassman, who wrote something to his mother. But the idea, and we're not going to read that now, but the idea is as follows. When I write a gratitude letter, and I think and I articulate in detail, you know, think back to Dayenu. I articulate in detail what somebody's done for me. That creates an important emotion of gratitude. But if I take that gratitude letter and I turn it into a gratitude visit, which means it's not just I'm writing it and storing it in my files, but I'm going to that person and I'm reading that letter to them, that creates a moment that you will not forget. It will create a moment of inspiration, of gratitude, of a memorable connection, and connecting it to what we spoke about in terms of the four parts of why a moment is powerful. This hits on all four. In this paragraph over here, it's clear why this visit would be a peak for Glassman's mother. Again, this person, Paul Glassman, wrote and read the letter to his mother. It encompasses all four elements of a defining moment. Elevation. It breaks the script. We don't usually do that. Our script is usually just rote. We don't stop and pause for gratitude. This is unexpected, totally breaks the routine. Number two, insight. Right? It changes my perspective on how I think about things, how I view things. Because I see how my son now views me. So that totally changes how I look at myself, how I look at him. Three, pride in his accomplishments and what he's done, and maybe in her own accomplishments, what she's been able to do. And finally, connection. It sparks a deep emotional message, connects the two of them together. So the gratitude visit, where we write and articulate clearly what somebody has done for us that has impacted our life, can create a moment that is deep, meaningful, that you can remember for the rest of your life. And what I'm going to close with is a blank slide. And I encourage all of you to fill it out on your own. What is your Seder night gratitude visit? And I encourage you to do this on two levels. A, keep in mind, this is, you can make a cognitive argument just from the sources that the Seder night is a gratitude visit. That's what it is. We take our text, our letter that we wrote, which is the Haggadah, and we call out to Hashem all the Hallel and the Lefichach and the Birkas Hamazon and the Dayenu, and we recall the story and we say, God, we are yours. We're going to do everything because of everything that you did for us. It's an expression of our gratitude and a reminder of the, so it's us reading our gratitude letter of the Haggadah, which means gratitude, and telling God how much we appreciate him. That's at its core. But I encourage us to go a step further in two ways. Number one, going back to what I suggested about Dayenu, write your own personalized gratitude letter to God and read it at the Seder. You want to read it to yourself, you want to read it to others, but read it out loud in a connection, in a moment of connection with God, in the moment of prayer and Shevach and Hodah, praise and gratitude towards God. Read that specific gratitude letter to God. Make it into a personalized gratitude visit. Suggestion number two, depending on who's there with you at the Seder, and maybe this happens before the Seder, maybe it happens at the Seder, write a gratitude letter and read it out loud to a person, somebody who's there with you. You want to make your Seder memorable. You want to incorporate a real emotion of gratitude, not just speaking it, not just talking it, but feeling it. This is how to do it. Create that moment. Do it both to God and to somebody else, and your Seder will be filled with an elevated emotional experience of appreciation and gratitude. It'll be a memorable experience, one that you and those who are with you can remember forever. And for those who have logistical issues and who can come to their Seder or not, do it beforehand. Or write it, read it at the Seder, even if that person's not there. If it's to a parent who's no longer with us, say it out loud anyway. Create that moment, create that experience, create that, engender that emotional experience. So with that, we conclude and wish everyone as we get ready for Pesach, with all the stress and all the chaos and all the problems that come along with preparing, maybe I'm projecting onto you, but all the difficulties in preparing for Pesach, that if we can invest a little bit of extra time to prepare in order to create a powerful moment in to engender and invoke these emotions of gratitude at the Seder, we can enhance the experience for ourselves and all of those around us at the Seder, and hopefully increase and improve our connection with others, our connection with God, and who knows, maybe we'll be able to incorporate all of those benefits of gratitude. And that's my bracha to all of us, that from the going back to the first slide, if we can inculcate this, we should have all the emotional, social, career, health, and personality benefits that come along with being somebody who embodies and expresses their gratitude. Thank you so much for your time, and I'm willing to answer any questions if anybody is interested.